America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A very great day for the President of the United States, Joseph Robinette Biden. Why? Because he swept all of the primaries on the Democratic side, except he lost American Samoa. And nobody knows who Jason Palmer is, who is the guy who won in American Samoa. It was also a great day for Donald John Trump, the Republican candidate. Now it's fair enough to say he's the presumptive nominee. All of the remaining opponents to President Trump, in other words, the one remaining opponent, whose name was Nikki Haley, she has now suspended her campaign. She has not endorsed President Trump, but even Mitch McConnell, who is a year older than Joe Biden, by the way, Mitch McConnell released a statement endorsing Trump, despite the fact that a number of people have wondered about, given the fact that Mitch McConnell is now leaving as Senate Majority Leader, and basically he has been treated with a great deal of contempt by President Trump, who has wanted to get rid of McConnell a great deal. There are a number of people who said that the biggest mistake of Mitch McConnell's career was never to have supported the impeachment of President Trump regarding the January 6th Capitol riots. McConnell gave very harsh comments on the Senate floor about President Trump's role in those riots. But then when it came time to vote, where there were, in fact, seven Republican senators who did vote to convict President Trump, a lot of people speculate if McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, had gone ahead to vote to remove President Trump from office, this during the last few days he had in office, after the January 6th riots, if that would have succeeded. Because if it had succeeded under the Constitution, President Trump would not be eligible to run this time. But it didn't happen. McConnell supported President Trump the first time. He's reporting President Trump this time. Here's the statement that was released by Mitch McConnell. He says, "It is abundantly clear that former President Trump has earned the requisite support of Republican voters to be our nominee for President of the United States." He issued this statement right after Nikki Haley had announced she was suspending her campaign. McConnell then went on, the Senate minority leader, the longest serving Senate leader for any party ever in American history. He said, "It should come as no surprise that as nominee, he will have my support. During his presidency, we worked together to accomplish great things for the American people, including tax reform that supercharged our economy and a generational change of our federal judiciary, most importantly, the Supreme Court. I look forward to the opportunity of switching from playing defense against the terrible policies the Biden administration has pursued to a sustained offense geared toward making a real difference in improving the lives of the American people." Well, there it is. And Mitch McConnell on board. Somebody who isn't on board with President Trump or President Biden and is still running a campaign. In fact, she actually left the campaign and then got back in. She's going to be joining us, Marianne Williamson, and explain what she hopes to achieve with running as a Democrat for the Democratic nomination for president against Joe Biden. If anything, Joe Biden, for all of his problems and all of the legitimate complaints people make about some of his cognitive challenges and the fact that he is losing a step and he isn't either physically or mentally or psychologically prepared to be president of the United States for any longer, at least not for the next 4 years. For all of those complaints, President Biden had a very good night. He had overwhelming support from Democrats, Dean Phillips, the congressman from Minnesota, who had been running a quixotic, very, very long shot campaign. He got 8% in his own Minnesota. What's interesting about this is in talking about the message that came here from the American people, what message they were sending. They certainly were sending a message that suggested that despite the fact that there are polls that show as many as 70% of American voters wish that this was not a repeat of Trump versus Biden. They wish there were other choices. But the question is, then why didn't they vote for them? There were certainly more votes on the Republican side, and this is why, for instance, the New York Times and their analysis about the five takeaways from Super Tuesday, they basically say that the takeaways are that, yes, Trump commands a majority of the Republican Party, but his big night of winning all of these primaries and caucuses across the country. And there's a new caucus coming up tonight in Hawaii, and where Trump is also very heavily favored. But the way that the New York Times sees it is it's a big night for Trump, but shows his weakness in the GOP. And why does it say he shows his weakness? No, it's not because he lost Vermont to Nikki Haley, which Vermont has the fewest delegates of any state for the Republican convention. And she won't even, it appears, get all of the delegates from Vermont. She there's 17 delegates, I believe, and she is likely to capture at least 8 of them. And the whole idea about the weakness that they talk about with President Trump is when he's sweeping the country, it's kind of hard to say that critically and credibly, but it's very appropriate to say that what it does show is that there still are a lot of people who would rather vote for somebody else. And why did people actually bother to go out to the polling places or to mail in their ballots or however they cast their votes in Republican primaries? Why did you have Nikki Haley at this stage of her campaign, where nobody expected she was going to actually win? There were still 20, 30, up to 40% of the voters in state after state who were basically saying, no, we're not ready to sign on. We're not ready to get on board the third Trump train. And because the third Trump train, a lot of people look at it and think that could be a train wreck. Meanwhile, Dean Phillips, the congressman from Minnesota, the grandson of Dear Abby, the advice columnist, and Dear Abby's sister was the other one who was also an advice columnist, because you had Dear Abby, who was Abigail Van Buren, and so he was the grand nephew of an advice columnist and the grandson of another advice columnist. Wealthy guy, and had been enjoyed some success making ice cream in the past for Talenti ice cream, but not so much success in his presidential campaign. He has dropped out of the campaign and endorsed Biden. Meanwhile, another major candidate who actually registers in the polls, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., started off running as a Democrat. Now he's running as an independent, but he has been fueling talk about yet another party switch. Is he going to go Republican? I will tell you about Robert F. Kennedy and his plans and much more coming up with Dana Milbank coming up and Marianne Williams. And on the Michael Medved Show, The Hill magazine reports Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is fueling speculation that he could join the Libertarian Party's presidential ticket as he seeks to qualify in more states heading into November. Kennedy raised eyebrows when he spoke at the Libertarian Party's convention late last month, annual convention in California, a development that was welcomed as a sign of intent from some libertarians and came as he gains ballot access in swing states as an independent candidate. While Kennedy himself has only casually entertained a possible switch, there is growing support among party members, strategists, and activists for him to join their ranks, multiple sources told The Hill. Why is that? Because they don't have the one thing that could actually win votes for them as a celebrity who is willing to run on the libertarian line. They did have that in 2016. And really, it was the libertarian candidate, Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico, who ran with another former governor, William Weld of Massachusetts, one Republican, actually both of them Republican. And they ended up running on a pro-gay marriage, pro-marijuana. That was a very big issue for Gary Johnson, the pot-smoking governor of New Mexico. And they took over 3%, 3.5%. It's one of the reasons that Trump won the election of 2016, is that if you look at the votes that Jill Stein got as a Green Party candidate and combine those with the votes Gary Johnson got, who was, by the way, a free trader. They were completely on the opposite side of Donald Trump. And when people do analysis, they got a lot of votes from Hillary Clinton. And by the same token, if Kennedy ran as a libertarian and he ran big on his suspicion of various conspiracy theories about assassinations of his father and his uncle, he would be somebody with some appeal for people on the right side of the political perspective who otherwise might vote for Trump. There's a buzz going on and a lot of interest in Kennedy, said Ron Nielsen, who served as former Libertarian presidential nominee Gary Johnson's campaign manager in 2012 and 2016. If he were to say that he would accept the nomination of the Libertarian Party, that would probably change a lot of heads, Nielsen said. There are people within the Liberty movement that would like to help him. One source in Kennedy's orbit echoed that statement. There is a willingness of people in the Liberty movement to consider Bobby for sure, the source said, speaking on the condition of anonymity to freely discuss internal campaign dynamics. So even though Nikki Haley is out of the running, Bobby Kennedy is still running around, a little bit in circles. He started out as a candidate for the Democratic nomination. Obviously, he saw he had no chance of beating Biden. He wants to be there in the November election. He has not been doing particularly well in getting on ballots, which is crucial. The Libertarian Party, and that's the big advantage for him, is already automatically on the ballot. And I believe it's 48 states. It's in most of the states. And given the fact that obviously Robert F. Kennedy Jr. wants as many votes as he can possibly get, this could shake up the campaign in kind of a major way. It would make the difference between Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Getting 10% of the vote, which is still a lot for a third-party candidate, or maybe getting up above that 15% where he gets in the debates and who knows. Meanwhile, the results yesterday are fascinating to look at because there were very few states where Nikki Haley just wiped out, where she had no presence at all. And she won in Vermont, and she won 50-46, the Wall Street Journal reports. And even in states that are not particularly favorable to her, like Alabama, she got 13% of the vote. Now, if that means that 13% of the voters in Alabama who, despite the tidal wave for Trump in that state, and he got 83% of the vote in Alabama, if you have in state after state after state at this relatively late stage in the campaign process, you still have 36% of the voters in Massachusetts. Well, Trump is not going to carry Massachusetts anyway. But there are states like North Carolina where Nikki Haley got 22%. And even in Texas, she got 18%. And Virginia, which is another state that the Trump campaign would like to dream of winning back for the Republican Party, it's gone for Democrats the last several elections. The idea of Nikki Haley still having that kind of following there, where she could appeal to Republican voters to hold back their support from Trump. How many of those people, if even half of the Haley voters, just half, decided that they were going to vote for somebody who's not Donald J. Trump, either a third-party candidate or a no-labels candidate, something else, they're not going to vote for Trump. They probably won't vote for Biden. That would make it a very tough race for Trump. Nikki Haley, in her four-minute speech bowing out of the presidential race, was dignified, but not as inspiring as the occasion called for. You remember Chris Christie's speech when he left the race? That was a terrific speech. Nikki Haley, well, she sounded like this, clip 14A.
Just over a year ago, I launched my campaign for president. When I began, I said the campaign was grounded in my love for our country. Just last week, my mother, a first-generation immigrant, got to vote for her daughter for president. Only in America. I am filled with the gratitude for the outpouring of support we've received from all across our great country. But the time has now come to suspend my campaign. I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets. And although I will no longer be a candidate, I will not stop using my voice for the things I believe in. Our national debt will eventually crush our economy. A smaller federal government is not only necessary for our freedom, it is necessary for our survival.
And she goes on to talk about other issues, including support for Ukraine. The First Lady of Ukraine turns down an invitation to come to Washington. We'll tell you about that and more coming up. On the Michael Medved Show, the day after Super Tuesday, and believe it or not, the day before the State of the Union address, which is also going to be an important speech if Joe Biden is going to show that he has a pulse and he has the energy and the stamina and the focus to be a credible president of the United States for the second term that he is seeking. The Dispatch has been a wonderful source of news and insight. David Drucker is a senior reporter for The Dispatch. He is the author of the book, In Trump's Shadow. First of all, we've been talking about the end of the Haley campaign, which is a fairly dramatic event and important event in this election. What about the idea that a number of people, including the New York Times, have put forward that, sure, Trump swept the country. He won everything except for the state of Vermont, the People's Republic of Vermont. And yet, at the same time, his showing in Super Tuesday showed some weakness for the Trump campaign and Juggernaut. What do you say to that, David Drucker of the Dispatch?
Yeah, well, I mean, there is some weakness. We've seen it. I think it's important to understand, first of all, Trump has been leading Joe Biden in polling for several months. Oftentimes, his swing state polling versus Biden is even better than his national polling. Having said that, we've seen in these Republican primaries up until last night that Haley would pull in most states anywhere from 25% to 40% of the participants in the Republican primary, which in some states included independents and a small number of Democrats. I don't think it was horribly significant, the Democrats that were participating. The independents were significant. In some of the states last night, in Trump's strongholds like Alabama, Haley did worse. But I think what we're seeing is sort of the crystallization of a faction of Republicans that, you know, I'd refer to for shorthand as the Ronald Reagan faction. The faction that, in fact, used to be in the majority for about 40 years or so, up until even including 2016, I'd argue, and is now a minority faction with the insurgent populists now in the majority, at least as constituted with Trump as the standard bearer. And the question is, particularly given how much many of these voters dislike Trump personally and dislike the controversy surrounding him and the way he behaves himself, is that combined with disagreements with him on key fiscal and national security issues enough to keep them from supporting him in November? And if enough of them in the right states don't want to support him in November and don't, that could be a problem for him.
Well, you talk about the issues that would move Ronald Reagan. There's a story today, just breaking today, that apparently the White House invited Olena Zelenska, the wife of Vladimir Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, to be the guest of the president of the United States at the State of the Union address tomorrow night. And obviously what they had in mind was for President Biden to make a pitch for aid for Ukraine and to have her in the gallery and then stand up and take applause from everybody there. The fact that she turned it down, basically they don't want to alienate the Republicans any more than they're already alienated from the aid to Ukraine. But that is, if you were an old-style Reagan Republican confronting the evil empire, wouldn't that support for the Ukraine be one of the things distinguishing between old-style Reagan Republicans and a new-style Trump populist Republicans?
Well, look, I mean, clearly, at least I think it's clear that the Democratic Party, at least under Joe Biden, is the more internationalist power. Now, Biden himself is dovish, very hesitant to take military action, hesitant to project American power. We've seen that in the way he's handled Iranian provocations in the Middle East since October 7th. We've seen it in the way he withdrew U.S. forces from Afghanistan. And we've seen it even in his hesitancy to move too quick to aid Ukraine, although he's been a stalwart ally of Ukraine. But still, between the two parties as represented by these presumptive nominees, Biden, in a sense, is more Reagan-esque in that he believes in strong American alliances and he does believe in an American-run world order versus an America in retreat that simply deals with individual countries on the basis of self-interest at any given time, an approach that would create a power vacuum that China could move into, or Russia, if it wasn't completely decrepit after being debilitated by the war in Ukraine. And so that's definitely something Biden can use, I think, to appeal to Republicans that have supported Nikki Haley. I will say, in interviewing many of them over these many months in different states, you know, they find not surprisingly, Joe Biden to be in many ways an ineffective president, but also just on the opposite side of key issues that they care about. And of course, he's a known longtime Democrat that, while may not be as threatening as some of the newer progressives, is, you know, still has a history of being quite liberal on the issues they care about.
So what is the key difference in terms of what we're going to see from Donald Trump, if there is a difference, between the primary season ending and the general election season now beginning? That's your latest piece at the Dispatch.
Yeah, no difference. I mean, Donald Trump is who he is. He doesn't change. And, it's, you know, usually once you get elected president, you don't believe you have to change. And look, Donald Trump, you know, claims erroneously that the election was stolen, fomented a riot at the Capitol on January 6th, is under a criminal indictment in four different cases, and he's still in a position to beat Joe Biden. He has no reason. I mean, from a political standpoint, he should look at this and think to himself, you know, if I made some tweaks, if I did change, that would really put me in a more secure driver's seat. But if you, you know, if you're a 78-year-old man and you seem to be getting ahead doing it your way, the fact that you're 78 means you're unlikely to change. And if you think it's working, you're doubly unlikely to change. So I wouldn't expect him to change. He never has.
What do you think the chances are, if he is elected president of the United States, which is entirely possible, that he will use his power to continue investigating the alleged election fraud from 2020?
Well, you know, on the one hand, he often says a lot of these things and then doesn't necessarily follow through. But, you know, given that he's going to be a lame duck on day one, and that he feels particularly persecuted, and that we, at least the thinking is that he's not going to be surrounded by the same types of traditional Republican policymakers and operatives that he surrounded himself with in his first term, but that he'll be surrounded much more by the conservative populists that, you know, that emanate from the, as we now think of, the MAGA wing of the party. I'd say we can't rule it out, because he's different, and the people around him, the people that are going to be advising him, we think are going to be different.
Yeah, and again, he is running on the promise of retribution, which means getting even with people. I think the chances of him, right at the beginning of his term, going after those questions of election fraud, etc., from 2020, I think he's going to go for it. Meanwhile, more details about what the people said yesterday on Super Tuesday and what the president is likely to say and not to say at the State of the Union address tomorrow.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved show, clearly the biggest impact of the day for Super Tuesday was the end of any serious competition against President Trump for the Republican nomination. I do believe, and I think that most of the political conventional wisdom is correct, it's going to be a close election. How close? At least as close as last time. Last time was not that close in terms of the popular vote. Biden won the popular vote by 7 million. And that's one of the things that people are very upset about in the Trump campaign, is they can't imagine he lost to Hillary in the popular vote by 3 million. He lost to President Trump to Biden by more than 7 million. The assumption is it must be a fraud. But the fact is, the truth of the matter is that that President Trump got almost exactly the same percentage of the vote, 46%, in 2016 as he got in 2020. And that the polls show he's likely to get in 2024. The only real question is, okay, so how many votes is Biden going to get? Is Biden going to get 51% of the vote like he did last time? And the chances seem to be absolutely not, because there is polling on Joe Biden that shows that some 10% of the people who voted for him last time say they won't vote for him this time. On the other hand, nearly all of the people who voted for President Trump last time are planning to vote for him this time. So that's one of the reasons that things to be tilting toward Donald Trump. But of course, what would help him, and I think it would matter a great deal, would be if some point in the days ahead, and I think it's probably more likely than not, that you found Nikki Haley actually reconsidering and coming out and endorsing President Trump over President Biden. This was her middle part of her very brief, dignified, well-delivered, but not tremendously inspiring, sad in many ways, her remarks made last night after losing all of the Super Tuesday states. As last night meaning this morning, early this morning, she made these remarks after having lost everything except the state of Vermont. Here is Nikki Haley.
Our Congress is dysfunctional and only getting worse. It is filled with followers, not leaders. Term limits for Washington politicians are needed now more than ever. Our world is on fire because of America's retreat. Standing by our allies in Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan is a moral imperative. But it's also more than that. If we retreat further, there will be more war, not less. As important, while we stand strong for the cause of freedom, we must bind together as Americans. We must turn away from the darkness of hatred and division. I will continue to promote all those values, as is the right of every American. I sought the honor of being your president, but in our great country, being a private citizen is privilege enough in itself. And that's a privilege I very much look forward to enjoying.
And her husband is coming home soon from Michael Haley, from his deployment with the National Guard in Africa. And she concluded this way with mentioning Donald Trump. But you'll notice that even though she wishes him well, she doesn't endorse him. She stopped short of that until, no, I don't think she wants to, or that anyone would consider her a choice for vice president. But here is the conclusion of her remarks.
In all likelihood, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president. Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us. I have always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee. But on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that. At its best, politics is about bringing people into your cause, not turning them away. And our conservative cause badly needs more people. This is now his time for choosing.
And the time for choosing, of course, refers to the famous speech that Ronald Reagan delivered in 1964 when he was campaigning for Barry Goldwater. And he did a speech on TV that helped him win the governorship of California 2 years later, and then to go on and win the presidency in 1980. Speech was called A Time for Choosing. Karl Rove talks about some of the choices and some of the obstacles that President Trump is going to face in the campaign ahead. This on CNN, clip six.
Strong night for Donald Trump. We've got the big enchiladas yet to come in the form of Texas and California. But I wouldn't be surprised if, given what he's doing in the rest of the country, he didn't take California, where you, if you get 50% plus one, you take all of the delegates. So a very good night for him. And it's in all likelihood his campaign's projection that they're going to win a majority of the delegates by either by later in the month, the 19th at the latest, is probably accurate. Having said that, the high command of Team Trump ought to be concerned about unifying the Republican Party, because as we see in the in these states, a third of the vote in Virginia, 43% of the vote in Massachusetts going to Nikki Haley, a quarter of the vote in North Carolina. Maine has now dropped down to about a quarter of the vote, but it was 31% for Nikki Haley. Vermont, 48%. There's still some work to be done to unify the Republican Party, and that's going to depend a lot on his tone tonight and whether or not he stops doing things like calling her bird brain and threatening that if you give money to her campaign, you're going to be permanently banned. We'll see how he does tonight. He did well in Iowa with his victory statement, unifying, humble, gracious. Not so good in New Hampshire, and tonight is going to be the big night, and he's going to set an important tone for either a unified Republican Party or a divided Republican Party.
Okay, we're going to play some of what Trump had to say so that you can make up your own mind for those of you who are not complete political fanatics and addicts waiting until late at night on Super Tuesday night to hear the comments of the victorious and not-so-victorious candidates. Speaking of victorious and not-so-victorious candidates, one of the few remaining candidates for president, she is still challenging Joe Biden, and it was pointed out she actually had a very good night last night because she finished second to Joe Biden in many, many states. I'm talking about Marianne Williamson, the spiritual guru and best-selling writer who is still running for president or running for president again, like Ross Perot in 1992. She pulled out of the race, and then she jumped back in. What is Marianne Williamson planning to achieve? We will also be speaking with Dana Milbank of the Washington Post, who changed his registration to the Republican Party. He had been a registered independent for years, but he wanted to vote for Nikki Haley to send a message to President Trump. And the only way he could do that in the Washington, D.C. primary, which Nikki Haley won, is change his registration. So how did it feel to be a registered Republican? And what about the future of Dana Milbank's new party? We will get to that and much more coming up in this greatest nation on God's green earth.